First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
Two North Florida congressmen vote no on removing Confederate statues from the U.S. Capitol building. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, why the fight is still going to take down monuments to the Confederacy, including in our area. Already getting your calls? Join us. It's 549-2937. Then later, activists bike from Miami to Jacksonville and all the way up the East Coast, calling for an end to the 60-year blockade against Cuba. But first this hour, the House of Representatives Tuesday voted to remove all Confederate statues from public display in the U.S. Capitol building in Washington. More than 100 Republican members of Congress voted no on the measure. That includes two representatives from our area, John Rutherford and Michael Waltz. More about their vote in a moment. The statue removal at the Capitol is part of the ongoing national effort to take down monuments to the Confederacy. That includes local statues and markers and school names here in Jacksonville. Some of those have yet to come down, by the way. We thought, in light of the vote in Washington, it was time for an update on what's going on here in our area on all of this. Jacksonville resident Earl Johnson Jr. is the man to fill us in. He is the founder of the national group TakeItDownNow.org and the son of Earl Johnson, who served in his lifetime in this area as attorney to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Earl Johnson Jr., good to have you back on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Always good to be with the great Melissa Ross. Always good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, you are too kind. Give us a call, everyone, as we talk about the ongoing push both at the U.S. Capitol and around the nation and here in Florida to remove monuments and markers to the Confederacy. What are your thoughts? Give us a call, 549-2937. You might have thought this was all over with. It's not. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax, and our Facebook page is open. Now, as I mentioned, Earl, you are the son of MLK's attorney, Earl Johnson. He was a very important civic figure in this community, as are you today. You are the founder of the national advocacy group TakeItDownNow.org. So I want to begin by asking you about this vote in Congress Tuesday to remove statues, busts that honored the Confederacy. All Confederate statues are going to be removed from public display in the U.S. Capitol, along with the bust of the former Chief Justice of the United States, Roger Taney. He was the author of the 1857 Dred Scott decision that declared that people of African descent were not U.S. citizens. This passed the House with a vote of 285-120. All Democratic members supported the legislation. All of the no votes came from Republicans. That includes our two local congressmen, John Rutherford and Michael Waltz. They both gave us statements about this, and their statements basically indicate that they voted no on the legislation because they felt the move violated states' rights, that state legislatures should be the ones to decide whether to remove these statues in the Capitol since they were originally placed there by different states. What are your thoughts about their vote and their comments?
Well, goodness, you know, as we approach the 4th of July holiday season, as the kids say, Melissa, it just seems to hit a little different this year. You know, much has transpired over the last 12 months here locally, from the renaming of the Hemming Plaza Park that was named after a Confederate, the Human Rights Ordinance passing the Social Justice Committee, and within the past 2 weeks, we've seen the school board vote to remove the Confederate names of public schools here. Mm-hmm. Juneteenth, celebrating the Emancipation Proclamation of black slaves in the South, has become a national holiday. We've seen George Floyd's killer sentenced. And then, as you've mentioned, just this week, the day before yesterday, Congress finally voted to remove the statues of Confederate traitors from our Capitol Rotunda. It is huge. But as we sit here right now, And notwithstanding all the hubbub about what statues to the Confederacy have been relocated from public land, and keep in mind, that's all we're talking about always, statues and honorariums on public property. There remain nearly 1,800 Confederate honorariums today in America. We spend, according to the Smithsonian, about $40 million every several years on these Confederate homages. They span across our country from San Diego, California, to the state of Delaware. Indeed, the largest monument in America as we celebrate the 4th is not to America, but to the Confederacy. That is Stone Mountain, just north of Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you mention the 120 Republican Congress members that voted to maintain these statues, and by any definition at this point, you cannot have a legitimate conversation about what the Confederacy was, what it still means, without the truth of the fact that the Confederacy was founded upon the ideal of white supremacy. Those aren't my words, but those are the words of the Confederacy. And as you know, Melissa, I normally begin this conversation, which can be a difficult one for many people, especially if they're caught up into the notion that the relocation of statues is somehow destroying history. I start with the cornerstone speech by Alexander Stephens, the vice president of the Confederacy. He's one of those folks, one of those men whose statues will be removed from the rotunda, one of the Confederates who denounced American citizenship, took up arms against our country, all for the continued enslavement of Black Americans. On March 21st of 1683, a week or two before the beginning of the Civil War, up the street in Savannah, he gave a speech, and I quote, and let me say this, he rejects, and they reject, the American ideal that all men are created equal. And I quote, "Our new government is founded upon exactly the opposite ideas. Its foundations are laid. Its cornerstone rests upon the great truth that the Negro is not equal to the white man, that slavery, subordination to the superior race, is his natural and normal condition. This, our new government, is the first in the history of the world based upon this great physical, philosophical, and moral truth," close quote. And so the pronouncement is that we, the Confederates, who have denounced American citizenship, have created the first government founded upon white supremacy. The second government was the Third Reich. Hitler was a huge fan of the Confederacy. And so you must begin any conversation about the Confederacy with that fact.
With that fact. And certainly in America, there's been 150 plus years of denial and a false narrative about the cause of the Civil War. It was fought to maintain white supremacy and slavery. So it seems kind of ironic to me, honestly, Earl, that our two congressmen, Michael Waltz and John Rutherford, say they voted no on removing the statues because they felt it violated the notion of states' rights.
Let me just finish.
For years and years, those who have believed a false narrative about the Civil War have said that it was not fought over slavery, but that it was fought over states' rights, which is not accurate.
It is not accurate. And, Melissa, it's very interesting. So 80% of public school teachers in America are white. 60% of all public school teachers in America believe that slavery is inadequately taught. Slavery in America is normally couched and bottled within the brief history on the Civil War. So on And we know that there's no federal, unlike math and science, right? There's no federal guideline. There's no federal standard as it relates to how schools are, teach social science and American history, how states teach that. And so this states' rights argument and the states' rights teaching, as we know, has been used on as part of the lost cause narrative, what I like to call, Melissa, the Walt Disney Antebellum version of the Confederacy and really what it meant. And so in Massachusetts, for example, slavery is mentioned 104 times in its history and social studies framework. However, in Louisiana, K through 12, social studies refers to slavery only four times.
That's right. Yeah.
Idaho mentions it twice. So
northern states, northern kids get a very different education than southern kids even today. But let me ask you, Earl, tell me about your organization's work. TakeItDownNow.org. You are engaged in the business of removing these monuments all over the country, including here in our area. Now, as you mentioned, Heming Park has been renamed after James Weldon Johnson. That statue came down. There are school renamings going on, or there actually have already happened around town. The Jacksonville Public Education Fund is more than 80% of the way toward covering the entire cost of renaming local schools that now will no longer bear the names of Confederate associated figures. You know, this process isn't done in our area. There's a statue in the renamed Springfield Park that was a monument to the daughters of the Confederacy, the women of the Confederacy. It's been covered up with tarp, but I believe it's still there. I don't think it's been taken all the way down yet. So can you bring us up to date on your efforts locally and nationally?
Well, first and foremost, let me make very clear that what we do is just one piece of this very large puzzle, and we see ourselves as supporting those who are doing the heavy lifting locally. So organizations locally, like Take 'Em Down Jacks, have been involved in this effort for well over a decade. And so what we're doing nationally, and what we saw we could be helpful with, was an effort to help organize and set out and help mobilize, frankly, where people were already working in those efforts. So, for example, in Galveston, Texas, and to the congressman's point, who voted against removing the Confederate monuments, everywhere you go, the decision makers are certainly local. And so what we know is, and so our organization never, ever advocates for any sort of destruction, simply a relocation by the decision makers. So, for example, in Galveston, the decision makers are a tribunal of judges who decide what happens to that Confederate monument that sits at the courthouse. As black and brown citizens walk into the courthouse for justice, they've got to pass by a monument to white supremacists. And so there, we've been working with the group in Galveston to help them mobilize and advocate for the removal, dealing with those decision makers. That's an example of
one example. Not to cut you off, just want to get a few calls on if I could. Lots of folks waiting on hold. Peter in Fernandina Beach. Go ahead, Peter. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I find it ironic that Congressman Rutherford is using the same excuse for not taking the statues down as the Confederacy used for seceding from the Union 160 years ago.
Right. That was the point I was making, is that the states' rights argument is being used by Congressman Rutherford and Congressman Waltz of Palm Coast in their no vote. There were a number of other Florida Congress reps who also voted no, by the way, around the state. Peter, thank you for that. Wells on the south side. Go ahead, Wells.
Good morning, Melissa, and good morning, Earl.
Morning, Wells.
Morning. I'm Wells Todd with Take 'Em Down,
right.
Here in Jack.
Good morning.
And Earl and I have been working, good morning, side by side. Basically, when we look at the need to remove these statues, what we see is a number of different issues. You know, states' rights is always thrown up when it comes to matters of the African-American community in the South. You know, we have this struggle now with critical race theory. And if critical race theory is taken up and pushed through and they continue to do what they're doing, they will continue to teach the lost cause regarding history in the South. The states' rights question has always been a question that has left the African-American community open to violence and economic exploitation. We're still fighting here, and we will continue to fight until that statue that you mentioned is taken down.
Let me ask about that. Why is it still, why hasn't it been removed all the way?
Well, you know, the mayor made a commitment last year to have that statue removed. And
well,
he
his commitment actually was for all
that.
Of them to be removed. His commitment,
exactly.
As I understood it, was for every single Confederate monument and homage that under his control and authority, and as we know, with the strongest mayor form of government in America, was going to be gone.
Well, then why isn't why isn't it gone?
Well, he's been silent, hasn't he? And it seems as though since the RNC decided not to come last summer, he's lost complete interest in this issue. And I'm afraid that, you know, Rutherford and other hardliners have taken the position of former President Trump to be a supporter, a Confederate supporter, and support maintaining the Confederacy on the public dime, on the public property. And so I'm afraid that this mayor is stuck in Republican politics and is failing to make good on his promise. It's a year later.
And remember
actually
Governor DeSantis
a year
DeSantis
later since
saying.
He's made his promise.
Remember what Governor DeSantis has decided also, that these statues should not be touched.
The statue in Springfield Park is covered up but not removed?
That's part
of
it.
Look,
in my opinion,
I live in Springfield, and in addition to that, you know, I have to jog on Confederate Road. When I go to my grocery store, I turn on to Stonewall Road and Jackson Road off of Riverside. The pedestal, as I understand it, remains at Johnson Park, notwithstanding promises. And so what we see is a lot of promises with no follow-through, at least as it relates to what's happened locally. We know that the strong mayor form here in our consolidated government doesn't require, as we saw, the mayor to form a committee, as has been done now, as I understood.
Let me ask you both. Is the statue in Springfield Park the only local monument that is still standing? Because it was our understanding that there were a number of them scattered around town and that they were all going to be removed. Is the statue in Springfield Park the only one still standing, or are there others? Wells.
Yes, there's another one. We want that one gone, too. The question here
is, where is the other one?
It's over in Arlington. There's one in Arlington.
And has it been covered up too, or is it still available to look at and walk by?
I believe it's still available to walk
So what I hear you both saying is that this promise was made, this big dramatic promise, but so the Hemming Park statue came down, but there are some others that have yet to come down. That's where we are.
Right, the Hemming Park statue came down, but the pedestal is still there.
Well, okay.
You know, what does that mean? What does that mean exactly? Does it mean that one day they'll put the statue back up on top of it? No, we want these things removed. And we are going to apply as much pressure as we can to the mayor to have him follow through on his promise. Now, he said that in front of a crowd of a few hundred people, and he needs to follow through on that. He needs to stop waiting around, because I think the stall is to pass legislation to say you can't touch these statues here.
Lots of comments coming into the show on Facebook, emails, and give us a call. Give us a call at 549-2937. Kathleen emails the show, "I find it very disingenuous that our local congressmen have used the excuse of states' rights over this when the subcontext was always about maintaining slavery." Tom emails the show that Rutherford does not want the bus of Confederate traitors removed from the Capitol. Please point out that the January 6th mob carried at least one Confederate flag into the Capitol itself. Rutherford voted against certifying the election, which is what that mob wanted. He preferred the outgoing white supremacist president to the one that was legally elected. Here's one more email. Jose, "I was always puzzled by the presence of these statues in our Capitol. Nowhere else in the world have I found statues of traitors to their countries in their halls of government. Even Benedict Arnold was less of a traitor than those who rose up against the U.S. in defiance of their sworn allegiance to the Constitution. After all, Benedict Arnold was a British subject, and I don't think he had sworn allegiance to the new U.S. Constitution that did not yet exist." Jose, you know your history. Thank you. Wells Todd, you know, I believe a few minutes ago, Earl pointed out that there were strong parallels between the white supremacist ethos of the Confederacy and the Third Reich of Nazi Germany, and that is a fair comparison. And so there was a big difference in this country. How we handled the aftermath of the Civil War, it differed greatly from the way Germany held its white supremacists or its anti-Semites to account. In South Africa, when apartheid finally fell, there was a Truth and Reconciliation Commission to eradicate that hateful ideology from the country as best they could. We've never really had that sort of reckoning in this country. We've had a lot of denial. And so the work of you at Take 'Em Down, Jax, and the work of Earl at TakeItDownNow.org, you're trying to do this work of reckoning 150 plus years later. And I think that's why it's been so painful for this country to go through this process so many decades after the end of the Civil War.
That's such a great point that you make.
You're absolutely right.
Go ahead, Earl.
Go ahead, Earl.
Thank you, Melissa. This is very difficult work, and it is because we have never had the reckoning. We, frankly, have indoctrinated in many ways this premise, the ideal of white supremacy within our country. And so Plessy v. Ferguson, when the U.S. Supreme Court decided that black people could not sit where white people sat, they made white supremacy the law of the land. And so that existed through 1954, Brown v. Board. Yes, these are difficult conversations. I had a conversation with two young white guys in their 30s, well-educated guys, who didn't know who Crispus Attucus was, who didn't understand that the first person to die for America's freedom that we're celebrating this weekend was a black man. And so that's because we don't teach our children. And that's what's dangerous about where we are in our country today.
Lots of comments on Facebook. If I could really quickly, lots of comments on Facebook. Brittany writes, "I am privately proud of my heritage, but over the last few years, I've grown more open-minded. The flags and monuments have a place, but that place is not public grounds in a celebrated fashion." Jane writes, "The lack of honesty and transparency by our legislators using the lost cause terminology of states' rights is a blatant use of disinformation. The Republicans are pushing for more division rather than facing our historic truths. And they also voted no on investigating the insurrection on 1-6. Let me, if I could, get a few more calls on the air as we talk about the effort to remove Confederate monuments. You might not have realized that two of them in our area have yet to come down, as we've learned this morning. Aaron in St. Augustine. Aaron, go ahead.
Yes, hi, Melissa. I just wanted to comment about how happy it made me to hear you state that northern kids get such a different education than southern kids do. Not to necessarily knock the quality, but northern kids really do get a different education. I know because compared to what my boys are getting down here in Florida, it's vastly different.
Yeah, that's true. States have a lot of control over the curriculum, and it's certainly the case, Aaron, that in the South, kids are not taught the accurate history of the Civil War. They just aren't taught it in the same way, which is really unfortunate. Wells Todd.
Yes. When we talk about how we haven't reckoned with, the history of race in this country and racism, you could look at Governor DeSantis and what he is doing and what he has said. He says there's no such thing as white supremacy or white privilege in America. He passed the HB1 bill that criminalizes protesters who go out in the street to protest against police killings. And now, he's talking about not teaching the history of this country by not teaching the history of African Americans. So we have these politicians, who really, truly don't work for us, who are carrying out, their job to squash and bury any attempt to truly reconcile with the racist history of this country.
And if I could, Earl Johnson Jr. of Take It Down Now, the governor's position on monuments and education may be part of the reason why Jacksonville City Hall hasn't moved yet to complete the job of monument removal in this city. Can you give me an idea of your actions on that going forward, both of you, beginning with Earl?
Thank you very much. And so, I mean, Jose was so right. When we see the Confederate flag, through the halls of Congress, as we did during the insurrection in January, the first time in the history of our country, it's got to be a reminder that the designer of that flag, Thompson, called it the white man's flag. There's a reason why the battle flag is the flag of the Confederacy. And so there's work, so much work to be done here. Locally, we've got to keep the pressure on, just as Wells has said, and that's what we do. We advocate locally. We have our petitions. We have national and local petitions. If you are interested in helping, go to our website, Take Them Down Jacks, and Take It Down Now, and get involved. But we advocate because the bottom line is we've got to get the decision maker to move, to be, again, motivated. I'm frankly of the opinion, Melissa, that locally the issue of removing the remainder of the monuments and getting these street names changed from Confederacies or Confederate names is going to be left to the next administration. I have no faith that the current administration has any interest in this.
Wells, Todd, how will your organization continue to lobby City Hall on this?
We will continue to demonstrate. We will continue to march. And we will continue to attend city council meetings because, this pressure has to come from the masses. It has to come from the streets. This is the only thing that really has changed things in this country has been movements. And our movement will continue until all of these statues are removed, street names are removed, names of bridges are removed. Bridges have been named after segregationists in this city that existed during 100 years of segregation and lynchings. And so we are not going to back down or give up on this struggle. We are going to meet with the mayor, and if necessary, we have to march in Tallahassee.
Thank you both for joining us. Earl Johnson Jr., founder of Take It Down Now, and Wells Todd calling in of Take 'Em Down Jax. Thanks, gentlemen.
Thank you very much, Melissa.
Much more still ahead. Later in the hour, jazz fills the San Marco Square this weekend. But up next, activists trying to end the blockade against Cuba are bicycling up the East Coast this week and stopping in Jacksonville. More about their cause next.
Jacksonville Music Experience from WJCT Public Media is your ticket to the local scene. Music reviews, curated playlists, music history, concert recommendations, profiles of local artists, and more. Turn your ear on the beautiful noise emerging from Northeast Florida and learn more about the local artist whose music is reverberating across the country. Visit jacksmusic.org to play it local and play it loud.
It's the biggest stories affecting the Sunshine State. Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup.
Each week at noon, we interview newsmakers and people from across the state discussing the stories and issues that affect your life. What's driving the conversation in Florida?
Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Every Friday at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
Girls just want to have fun. So does music director and station manager David Luckin. He's here to give us an update on the Jacksonville music experience at WJCT Public Media. Good morning.
Good morning. And we've got something really special planned. It starts at 12:01 tonight. We're going to play nothing but summer songs all summer long from the 4th of July, actually July 2nd through Labor Day. So we've picked all your favorite songs to stir up all those great memories of your first apartment, your first car, your first kiss, your first everything. Will be played all summer long right here on 89.9 HD3 Anthology. Hey, I forgot the most important part, where you can listen, and that would be Anthology HD3 or anytime at all. We're always on 7 days a week, 24 hours a day on the WJCT app, where you can hear the best music from the 60s and 70s and 80s every day. But as I said, this summer, we are playing all the songs that you remember from past summers.
So there has been a lot of expansion on the music side here in our little corner of the world over the last year. Tell us a little bit about the history of the JME and how it's grown.
Well, we came up with this about a year ago to come up with a platform that would collate all the music in our community. So we called it the Jacksonville Music Experience. And it would launch three radio stations, a classical, an oldies, and a chill out, the Electro Lounge radio station. And we would also put out a great webpage. Now we have jacksmusic.org, which collates all the things that are happening in town. There's playlists there. There's interviews. There's features. There's today in music history. So we're just building up the music. It came off the main channel as we went all news, but we're using all of our other platforms to keep the music alive in Jacksonville as part of the Jacksonville Music Experience.
Okay. And you have been personally involved in curating the playlists of these songs.
Yep.
And these radio stations. And by the way, it's multiple radio stations.
Yes.
Multiple programs and formats. Yeah.
Yeah. Electro Lounge Radio grew out of the Electro Lounge program after 15 years on the radio. It morphed into its own station. The 60s, 70s, and 80s was our relax station, which we've turned into Anthology so we could give you all the great music we grew up with for those three decades. And summer songs, I used the charts, Melissa. I had to diligently look at every summer, every chart, and then find the music. So we have about 1,300 summer songs over those three decades.
Check it out at wjct.org/jacksmusic. And all congrats to you, David Luckin.
And thanks for having me in. And it all starts 12:01 tonight and goes through Labor Day.
Listen in, everyone. Well, an activist and teacher named Carlos Lazo is bicycling into town this week. He's on a national mission to present petitions to the White House to end the 60-plus year blockade against Cuba. Lazo stops in St. Augustine tomorrow, and he bikes into Jacksonville Friday with an appearance Saturday at the Public Creek Regional Library. He's on the line now. Carlos, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for having me here and for having the opportunity to talk to your audience.
Tell us about this bike tour and why you're trying to call attention to the movement to end the blockade against Cuba.
Well, it's not really a bike tour. Bike tour we did last year, and we biked for 3,000 miles from Seattle to Washington. This is a walking pilgrims. We are walking 1,300 miles from Miami to Washington, D.C. And the reason because we are doing that is because the Biden administration, before they took the presidency, they promised that they will lift the sanctions that former President Trump imposed on Cuban families. Among those, Trump cut the sending remittance through Western Union to Cuba in the middle of the pandemic. He also cut the reunification program that allowed Cubans to apply for visas. He also closed the American embassy in Havana. And this is creating tremendous hardships in Cuban families, both in the United States and in Cuba. Imagine, in the middle of a pandemic, we are not able to send a cent to Cuba. All that on top of the embargo that have been in place for more than 62 years.
Yeah.
And since Biden promised that, and we created a petition before Biden become president, for when he became president, he will lift those sanctions and create breaches of law between our two countries.
And thank you for correcting me. We thought it was a bicycle tour. You're actually walking all the way up the East Coast.
And yes, we are walking.
You're having an event Saturday in Jacksonville from 10 a.m. to noon at the Pablo Creek Regional Library for people that can learn more about this Caravanista movement. There's been an embargo against Cuba for the most part for over 60 years. What's your answer to those who feel it's necessary to try to bring down the communist regime there?
Yes. Well, let me go back first. And tomorrow in San Agustin, we will also walk from the east side of the Bridge of Lions into the Plaza of Constitution. And that will happen. We will arrive there at 5 p.m. And I invite everyone who can be in the east side of the Bridge of Lions to be there and walk that bridge with us to the Plaza of Constitution. Now, the policies toward Cuba during 62 years have been a failure. The reason for those policies, the beginning of the Cuban Revolution, was to bring down the Cuban government, making that through starving the people. And that was something that is in official documents, the policies of the United States at the time. 62 years later, we are in the same position. The Cuban government is there, no political change in the island. And the only time when we saw some opening in the country, economically and even politically, and some freedoms and some inclusion was during the Obama years, when a lot of Americans visit Cuba, they exchange with Cubans there. Myself, I'm a teacher. I created a project called Factory of Dreams. And I, in the last 2 years before, during Trump, at the beginning of Trump's era, I visited Cuba with my students 6 times, with 40 students and parents. And they had the opportunity to meet with regular Cubans, to stay in the houses of Cubans. And I know the potential that Bridges of Love have between our two countries to change minds, to for Americans to become ambassadors of our values and at the same time to learn about the Cuban people.
Well, Carlos, I know you have a long walk ahead of you, and I want to thank you for calling in. You can learn more about this Friday at the Bridge of Lions, when Carlos will be walking over the bridge, and then Saturday in Jacksonville, come on out to the Pablo Creek Regional Library on Beach Boulevard from 10 a.m. to noon. Carlos Lazo walking all the way up the East Coast. They will present petitions at the White House Sunday, July 25th, urging for an end to the blockade against Cuba. Carlos, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me, and God bless everyone. Thank you very much.
And be safe on your journey. In a moment, the jazz explosion in Jax comes to the San Marcos Square this weekend.
The Jacksonville Music Experience from WJCT Public Media is your ticket to the local scene. Music reviews, curated playlists, music history, concert recommendations, profiles of local artists, and more. Turn your ear on the beautiful noise emerging from Northeast Florida and learn more about the local artist whose music is reverberating across the country. Visit jacksmusic.org to play it local and play it loud.
I'm Robin Young. What would you do if an alleged white supremacist on a chaotic and ultimately tragic shooting spree climbed into your car? We'll find out from a man who says if you think, as he did, this hate doesn't live in your quiet little town, you may be wrong. That's next time on Here and Now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, the New York Times' Adam Goldman reports on an undercover effort by conservatives to infiltrate progressive groups, political campaigns, and the offices of Democratic and moderate Republican elected officials. At the heart of the operation were a former British spy and security contractor Eric Prince, an avid supporter of Donald Trump. Join us
today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
Maybe you read the tweets. Well, now you get to see the movie.
This is messy. You are messy. Your brain is broke. Millions on Twitter read a viral thread from Asia Zola Wells in 2015. It played out like a crime novel, written 140 characters at a time. Then Hollywood came calling. We'll meet Zola and the film's writers next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, come on out to San Marcos Bayless Park this Saturday for some live music. It's part of the city's Jazz Discovery Series. I got a preview from jazz performer and teacher John Lumpkin II. Hey, John. Thanks for being with us. How you doing?
All is well, Ms. Ross. How are you doing?
Doing great. And I'm excited to hear about the Jazz Discovery Series this weekend in Jacksonville. Tell us about it.
Oh, yeah. Well, the Jazz Discovery Series is hosting its first jazz festival right in the heart of San Marco at Bayless Park, which is right across the street from Grape and Grain Exchange, and it's going to be from 4 to 9. We're going to be featuring the Jacksonville Arts and Music School, the John Lumpkin Institute, and also the Dave Champagne Quartet and the Let's Ride Brass Band.
That's a lot of jazz. You know, and there's a really vibrant sort of jazz music scene in this city. You play around town, and there are lots of other talented local performers who are part of this world, and you've got a devoted following locally. Tell us a little bit about that whole universe here in North Florida.
Well, I mean, if you want to get technical about it, I mean, it all started even with the, I guess you could say my years are coming up through the University of North Florida, knowing about the jam session that happens at the Caz Bar, which has been hosted by Eric Ream and Lawrence Buckner for a number of years. I mean, all the way to now, and it's present day with me actually having my own institute and having them actually have their regular performances every Sunday at the Posting House, which is also in San Marco from 4 till 7. So needless to say, the whole scene in and of itself as it pertains to jazz and jazz education, individuals learning about it and just experiencing the music, it's definitely been in the city, and it's been pushed and cultivated.
And what's it been like through this pandemic when you couldn't play live? That's been tough for live performers everywhere, right?
Yes, it was definitely hard, especially with myself, I mean, having a family here, five. From finding different grants and being able to do certain things, it was definitely difficult. However, it also sharpened me, if you will, to be able to more so get, I guess you could say, more thorough within my vision of what it is or what I wanted to do with the Institute and with the Jazz Discovery Series, and now coming out of it within the following year. And you can see the results. We just had the Jazz Discovery Series featuring Andre Murchison, Mina Scott, Dave Mita and his trio, as well as DeAndre Letson. I mean, all the way to us being able to now host our first jazz festival, as well as having weekly performances every Sunday at the Posting House, as I said earlier. So, yeah, we're coming stronger.
Yeah, coming back strong. And your institute, the John Lumpkin Institute, has taught students about this music, really enriched their education. You've sent off students to Juilliard and other places.
Yes,
so
ma'am.
You like to teach it as well as play it.
Absolutely. And I guess you could say a tidbit from that too as well. I just talked with TJ Reddick, who's a alumni from Douglas Anderson School of the Arts. He'll actually be sitting in with us as well on this coming Saturday. So it's kind of like a coming home, welcome home trip for them, if you will.
What do you like about jazz?
I like the ability to create, but create also with reverence from the past in terms of the struggle that the music in and of itself came from, the people that it came from, the community that it came from. If you learn how to play jazz, it opens you up to everything else, and I think that's indicative of the foundation that the music was placed on, which was based from a freedom that people wanted, but they did not have. And now, sonically, they are given freedom and ability to those individuals who seek after it, who want to play it, and learn from it. You can play this music, you can play anything.
Excellent. Well, check it out Saturday in San Marco, the Jazz Discovery Series, John Lumpkin II, leading the way. Have fun with it, John.
I sure will, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
Enjoy the music this weekend. And as John mentioned, the Jacksonville Art and Music School is also part of the fun. Here's a little music for you, just to give you a preview. Thanks for listening. And thanks to producer Heather Schatz, director Josh Torres, editorial director Jessica Palumbo, and digital editor Bill Bortsfield. Keep that email coming to us. We always value your feedback. Send them to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. You can also catch our podcast up later today on all platforms, including the WJCT app. Download it and check it out. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. Until then, have a great Thursday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.